It's really my pleasure to be here. It's my first time here visiting the school, and it's really an exciting time for me, although the principal did just show me the schedule for the day and inform me that I am the last speaker that is standing in the way of all of you going home. So I'm sorry to be here, at the same time that I'm very happy to be here. And I was asked just to share a few words on this very special day. And the reason why I think it's very special is because, actually, in this week's Parsha, Parshas Yisro, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the leader of the Jewish people, is doing the best he can to lead them and to do everything possible to do the best job at that. And at some point, his father-in-law, Yisro, says, Lo tov hadavar asher ato oseh, this is not a good idea, this is not going to work. Because how is it possible that you can have the entire Jewish people following you and asking you and consulting with you, and you think you can handle it on your own? And that is something that his father-in-law says is not a good idea. The only other place in Chumash where we find this wording of lo tov, of something being a bad idea, is in Parshas Bereishis, where the Torah says lo tov hayosa adam levado. And the Mefarshim have pointed out that what's clear from both of the places where the Chumash says that something is not good is where somebody thinks they can do something alone. And what's special about today is that we cannot live alone, and we certainly cannot lead alone. And as educators and as teachers, we need to make sure that we are connected with each other, that we draw strength from one another. And that's why days like this are so special, where we have an opportunity to remind ourselves of how lucky and blessed we are, not only to be in the profession, in the noble profession of chinuch, but also to remind ourselves of how lucky we are to have each other and to give strength and support to one another and to lead and to teach and to inspire and to educate together as a unit, as a group. And that's the greatest way to do so. Everybody knows, certainly all of us here in the room know, that it's quite challenging to be an educator. I'm sure it always was challenging. I have no doubt that it's gotten more and more challenging as time goes on. And a lot of what you heard this morning, I'm sure, address many of those challenges. But something in particular that I've been thinking about over the last couple of months, as I interact with the members of my own shul, and I can't say that I'm an educator like any of you because I'm not in a classroom setting and I'm not dealing with students, I'm not educating students every day. But something that I am finding, which I think is very, very confusing for many of our teenagers and high school kids and different members of the community that I'm interacting with, is, you know, the Medrash says in Parshas Noach, a very repetitive pasuk, Ela told us Noach, Noach ish tzadik, Es Elokim is halach Noach. How many times do you need to talk about Noach? How many times do you need to mention his name? And the Medrash asks in the Medrash Tanchuma, why is it that Noach's name is mentioned so many times in one pasuk? It's not the way any of us would structure a sentence. Anyone here an English teacher? Right? Or I just assume that that's just not the appropriate way to structure a sentence. So why does the Torah say his name three different times? And the Medrash answers, because Noach was one of three individuals, Shera'a Shlosha Olamos, that was able to see and experience three different worlds. And what were the different worlds that he experienced? The first one was that he saw a Olam B'Yishuvo. He saw a world that was calm, that was serene, that was tranquil, that was just happy, things were going well. And then the second experience of his life was he saw a world bechurbana. He watched the world actually destroy itself, and he watched as the Mabul took over all of humanity and all of society. And then chazav arah b'yishuvo. After all of that subsided, Noach once again had the opportunity to see a world in a different phase, and that was the world of rebuilding, the world of restoring that which was and reconstructing the reality of life as he wanted it to be. And the Medrash here tells us that there were three individuals who were able to have such experiences in their lives. We don't really need to go into them, but the Medrash says that Daniel had this and Eov had it as well. He had a nice, quiet life, a perfect life. Then his life was upended. Everything was turned on its head. And then once again, his life went back to normal, or some kind of new normal. But I feel very much that this is a great challenge that our community is facing. And the challenge is that there's so much upheaval and so much change and so much uncertainty that we've been through over the last 2 years that our job, as difficult as it ever has been, is particularly challenging now when we see that our students are dealing with a world that they knew to be b'yishuvo, a world that was just calm and things were going pretty well. Not for everyone, obviously, but for many people, there was some kind of rhythm to life. And then it was upended. And now we're hoping that at some point we'll be able to transition ourselves and our students into a reality where it's once again going to be a world of yeshuvo, of rebuilding, of restoring, of figuring out how we're going to reprioritize our own lives. And I really have to say that with all the obstacles that our students are putting up with, and with all the difficulty and all the uncertainty that they are facing, and the anxiety levels are so high, we're all very much aware of that. But it is their teachers, it is their educators who are making all the difference. And I can only say that the stability that I've seen in our community is because the teachers are creating that environment for the students of all the communities. And that's something you should all be very, very proud of. And we as communities are extremely appreciative to you for creating that environment, for giving a healthy place for our students to grow and to feel that they can know that there's going to be something certain and something definite when they get into the classroom. They're familiar with what it is, and it's just been giving a tremendous sense of chizuk to so many different levels of our community. So I thank all of you. Just in this past week's parsha, we started off with the words "Vayihi b'shalach paro es ha'am," and the Medrash has an idea that any time the word "Vayihi" shows up in Chumash, there's some kind of indication that something went wrong. Now you have to work very hard to figure out how that really fits in. But one of the challenges that the Medrash has is, what does it mean "Vayihi b'shalach paro es ha'am"? What was possibly wrong with Paro letting the Jewish people go? Why is that at all in the pejorative term? What could be negative about that? And the Medrash says, Mashal lemaha davar doma. The Medrash explains to us what it is. La adam shahaya lo pardes. There was an individual who had an orchard, who had a big farm. And on one occasion, he was approached by some kind of undisclosed individual, and he asks him, how much would he be willing to sell the farm for? Gives him a price. He says, you know, let's say $50,000. I'd be happy to sell you all of this land. They make a deal. They have a lawyer comes, draws out the contract. Everything's signed, and he transfers the ownership to this buyer. A couple of weeks later, a friend of his turns to him. He says, you know, I see that you just made a great sale. I'm curious, how much did you sell it for? He said, $50,000. $50,000? How did you allow him to rip you off? How did you allow him to cheat you like that? $50,000? Do you know what's in that orchard? Do you understand what is in that farm? Do you recognize the fact that each patch on its own was worth $50,000? So you have a whole bunch of orchards that have grapes in them, and you have a whole bunch of pomegranates over there and a bunch of dates over here. Each one of them on its own right was worth the value of what you were just paid. You got completely ripped off. How did you allow that to happen? And he turns around and he says, you know, Ilu ha'isi yodea, I wish somebody would have told me beforehand. Now it's too late. I already signed the deal. Everything went through, and it's too late for me to turn around. But had I only known what I had there before I sold it, I maybe would have been able to make a more educated decision. And the Medrash says that the same was the thought process of Paro. Paro looked at the Jewish people while they were enslaved as subhuman beings. He gave them no respect. He did not have any value for the lives that they were leading. And there was nothing about them that he cared for. And that is why he let them go ultimately. He had enough of having the Jewish people there. And on that occasion, he was approached and somebody said, how did you let the Jewish people go? Do you know what some of these individuals represent? Do you understand that in this group there are some very intelligent and some very accomplished and very capable contributing members of society that you have just let go? How did you not appreciate their value? How did you not understand? And the Medrash says, on that occasion, Paro turns around and he says, Vayihi, I can't believe that I just did that. I can't believe I lost the opportunity to take advantage of the great capacity that I had in my own hands, but I just let it go because I refuse to recognize, I refuse to acknowledge, and I refuse to identify the talent that was right here in my own backyard that I could have taken advantage of, but I missed that chance and I missed that opportunity. It's the same comment that the Medrash has about David HaMelech. It's a fascinating story. As we know, David HaMelech is one of the eight children of Yishai. Yishai has eight sons, and Shmuel is charged with coming to the home of Yishai and anointing one of his children to be the Melech al Yisrael, to be the king over the Jewish people. And they're going through one child after the other, and Shmuel says, no, this is not the one, this is not it. He goes through seven sons, and Yishai says, I guess he got the wrong address. This is not where you belong, this is not where you should be looking. And he says, no, do you have another child? To which he responds, yeah, I have another son, his name is David, but he's nothing special. He's out in the woods. He's grazing with the sheep. He's taking care of the animals. This is not a job for him. And Shmuel says, no, let me meet him. And when he engages David, he realizes, no, this is exactly who God had in mind. This is exactly who is supposed to be the Melech al Yisrael. To which David HaMelech responds, a pasuk that we're familiar with from Hallel, Even ma'asu habanim haisa l'rosh pina. That's a description of himself. I was the laughingstock. I was the butt of all jokes in my family. I was an afterthought. And haisa l'rosh pina, in the end, I became the foundation, the cornerstone of what Jewish people are all about. I was the Melech HaYisrael, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. And that's what David says about himself. That was his experience. But it's all because there were some people around him who were not able to recognize. Can you imagine, had they let that go and not really honed in on the value that David HaMelech brought to the table, that he had the ability to lead, that he had the ability to inspire and educate generations of our people. We say every Friday night, also a pasuk from Tehillim, Moshe ve'Aaron b'ko'anav, u'Shmuel b'korei shemo. And the Medrash asks, Moshe and Aaron, we know, were the greatest of the Nevi'im. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu first, but Aaron was a close second. How could Shmuel possibly be put in the same sentence? How is it possible to even think of lumping these three together? To which the Medrash answers that yes, Shmuel was somebody who was on par with Moshe ve'Aaron. And the Medrash says, how is that possible? How can Shmuel have been in a position where he was able to be in any way comparable to Moshe or Aaron? And listen to what the Medrash says. And the reason I'm sharing all of this is because I think it's extremely relevant to educators to understand. So the Medrash tells us that in the days before Shmuel was born, there was a baskol, there was a heavenly voice that went around that everybody was able to hear. And the voice said, Asid Sadik Echa Lamod. There's going to be a young man who will be born. His name is going to be Shmuel. And he will be born from a woman like every other child in the neighborhood. He's going to be the same as everyone else. His name is going to be Shmuel. And he's going to be the leader of the Jewish people. He's going to be a great Navi. He's going to be an entirely amazing personality. And lo and behold, the Medrash says, every mother believed that that was going to be her child. So everybody named their children Shmuel. And everybody raised their children assuming, my child is going to be that one that the heavenly voice was talking about. That was in reference to me. Then the Medrash says, as the children got older, people started to realize, I guess it's not going to be my child. I thought it would, but things didn't turn out to look the way that I thought my child would be that one. But now, 20 years in or 15 years in, might not be the right one. But I believe when you live in a society where everybody has such aspirations for their children, where everybody believes that my child can be the one to lead the Jewish people, where everyone in your community believes that there's some very impressive latent potential in the child that I just gave birth to, yes, one Shmuel HaNavi will emerge. One great personality who's on the level of Moshe and Aaron will emerge from a society like that. And as teachers, as educators who are in a classroom, it's an opportunity that we have, but it's also a great challenge. We have many students. I don't know how big or small the classes are here, but we cannot give equal attention to everybody. It's impossible. We are trying our best. We do our best to really focus on the needs of each of our students and each of our children. And we do to the best of our ability, but something we always need to remember is that there's going to be someone who will come from our classroom who is going to do something very special. And that someone can be everyone. And the truth is, when any of them grow up, they will all do something special. What that's going to look like depends on their personal contributions and how it is that they choose to lead their lives. But we need to go into it with a belief that we really can have something unique and special that comes from our students, and we cannot look down upon them. You know, we say on Rosh Hashanah, one of the piyutim that we recite, and it's so meaningful, V'chol ma'aminim. Everyone's heard that in shul, and everybody has their own tune, and everyone sings it. The first line, V'chol ma'aminim shehu el emuna. You ever thought about that phrase? Probably not. It's okay. But it's really borrowed from a pasuk in Parshas Ha'azinu, where the Torah says, El Emuna Ve'ein Avel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referred to as the El Emuna. How do you translate those words? V'chol ma'aminim, we all believe, Shehu, that he is. Anybody, Hebrew teacher here? We all believe, Shehu, El Emuna. Any Israelis? Anybody speak Hebrew?
God of faithfulness.
A God of faithfulness? What does that mean? So it should say, we believe in a God who we have faith in, right? That he is a ne'eman. What does it mean? Shehu el emuna, that he is a God of belief. It should say that he is a God that we believe in. So how do you... What? Oh, so the Medrash asked this question. What does it mean, el emuna? And the Medrash in Parshas Ha'azinu writes, Shehemin ba'olamo ubaro, that the only reason why God created us is because he believed in us. So when we say v'chol ma'aminim shehu el emuna, it doesn't mean we believe in a God that we believe in because he's so special. No, we believe in a God who believes in us. And that's what's special about him, that he actually believes in us. The very first paragraph we say in the morning when we wake up, moda ani. First of all, in Hebrew, it's a little strange to say moda ani. It should be ani modeh. So why do we say moda ani? So some say the reason why is because the first word out of your mouth in the morning cannot be ani. Can't talk about yourself. You have to say something grateful, say something positive. So you start by saying moda ani, even though grammatically it may not make sense to say it that way, to structure it that way, but we start off moda ani. What's the end of that paragraph? We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Bechemla Rabba Emunasecha. So most translated to mean that we have a great amount of belief and trust in you. Not what it means. Rabba Emunasecha means we thank you for giving us another day of life. And we understand and appreciate that the only reason why you did that is because you have an inordinate amount of emuna in us. You believe that there's something I can accomplish. You believe there's a reason why I'm here. And you have a never-ending amount of pride in who I am. And that is the perspective that we need to have for our students and for our children. We can never turn around and say, I can't believe I had that student in my class and I just missed it. I didn't recognize. I didn't pay attention. I didn't understand. I didn't really hone in to the talents or to the capabilities or to the contributions that student is able to make. And it's complicated and it's hard when we have many students in the room and we have many people to pay attention to. But that is our job and that is what we're supposed to be doing and focusing on. And that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us every day. The Ribbono Shel Olam believes in us. That's why he put us here. He has a complete faith in humanity that they're going to do something positive in the world. And we just have an opportunity to do the very same and mirror that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us onto our children and our students. One of the most basic and fundamental beliefs is that we all understand that Moshe Rabbeinu is considered to be the eternal hero of the Jewish people. And he is described in Chumash as a person who lived a humble life, as a person who lived a selfless and heroic life, as an individual who was so sublime and spiritually elevated in everything he did. He was so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, it didn't start off all that grand. The first time he's engaged by the Ribbono Shel Olam, is that my cue? Done? Sit down. When he was selected to lead the Jewish people, so we know that Moshe Rabbeinu encounters HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Sneh. But when we read the Psukim, it sounds like a very simple conversation, but the Medrash cues us in. It was not simple at all. The Medrash writes that actually that was a conversation that lingered for 7 days. That conversation was a very long conversation at the Sneh. So what happened? Writes the Medrash, Moshe Barach Min HaSarar. Moshe Rabbeinu ran away. He had no interest in this position of leadership. B'shah Sh'amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, Ve'ata Lecha Ve'ashlachacha Al Paro. I'd like you to go and interact on behalf of the Jewish people and negotiate with Paro. And he says, no, he gives all kinds of excuses. And he says, I'd like to avoid this at all costs. This is not my thing. Shlach nabiyat, tishlach, do me a favor. I value the Jewish people greatly. I'll do whatever I can, but this part of it is really not for me. Really. I'd appreciate it if you found someone else. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I think you're the right one. Moshe Rabbeinu turns back and says, no, did you forget? I'm a kavad peh, I'm a kavad lashon. I have issues. I really don't know how to present myself properly. I'm not a politician. I'm not made for this role. This is just not me. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is relentless, and he continues to argue with him. Finally, After 7 days, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecha. Listen, Moshe, in the end of the day, I'm going to win this dispute. You're going to end up going. So let's stop fighting. It's been 7 days already. The Jewish people are waiting for you. So maybe you should just go. Sof Chalelech, you're going to end up going. So let's just get down to business. Let me explain to you what your job description is supposed to be. And let's move forward from there. Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu says, so what would you like me to do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, okay, I want you to go to Paro and you're going to say, Ko Amar Hashem, God said that I should come here and negotiate with you, take the Jewish people, let them leave. And we're going to be on our way to Eretz Yisrael and we're going to go through this whole experience in the Midbar and everything. He's outlining exactly what's supposed to happen. Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu goes, loyally, faithfully, he does what he's supposed to do, turns around and he says, okay, God, I went way out of my comfort zone. This was not for me. I told you that. But now I've done what I was supposed to do, and now I'm ready to retire. Halach v'yashav lo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you think you can retire? You think that's all I had in mind, is that you should go one time? I have another job for you. And he tells him to go back again and negotiate a second time. Then he says, I want you to do the makos, and I want you to show Paro all of the great and incredible might of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the phenomenal leadership that you embody in the way you're going to take out the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu, after each job that he's given, after each opportunity, he comes back and says, okay, I did my job. Really, again, I went way out of the way for you, but please find someone else. And God keeps telling him, no, I have more for you to do. So, says the Medrash, after all of this, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? Imagine he has to write a bio. He is coming to Bruria to consider himself for this very small group of men that work here. So imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu is writing up his CV, he's writing up a bio, and he's trying to figure out, so what should I put? Right? You'd get this and you'd say, wow, this man is amazing. So what happens? Lesof, Hotzia mi Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu successfully takes the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. If that wasn't enough, Kara lehem asayam, Hori lehem asaman, Moshe Rabbeinu is responsible for the man falling from heaven. Hela lehem asaber, everyone's thirsty, no problem, Moshe Rabbeinu takes care of it. Then everybody wants some meat, Moshe Rabbeinu brings the slub. He's the hero, he's unbelievable. He kifan anani akava, people are afraid, what's going to be, our enemies, we're not trained for warfare. No problem, Moshe Rabbeinu negotiates, they're going to have anani akavod. Ases hamishkan, next week's parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu takes it further, as if it wasn't enough that he had done yet, Moshe Rabbeinu now instructs the Jewish people to be involved in building a Mishkan. They successfully go through that campaign. He puts it together. Finally, Moshe Rabbeinu turns around to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, okay, can I retire? Have I not done enough? And let's remember, I didn't want to do this in the first place. So have I done enough for you? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I appreciate your comment, but Chayecha, listen to me. Now I have a job for you that is more difficult and more important than anything I've asked you to do until now. What is that? What could HaKadosh Baruch Hu possibly ask Moshe Rabbeinu to do at this juncture of his life and say that it's more critical and more important than anything else that he's done until this point? And the Medrash writes that at this point in his life he was told, "L'lamed l'bini tuma v'tahara." Your job is now to become Moshe Rabbeinu, to become the teacher of the Jewish people. And that is a harder and more important and critical job than anything else I've asked you to do until now. Kriyas Yamsuf, wonderful. Makos, beautiful. Anane Akavod, amazing. Mun falling from the sky, the Be'er coming out of a rock, it's all terrific. Now I have a job for you that is more critical than anything else. And think about it. Moshe goes down in history not as Moshe Adonenu, not as Moshe Malkeinu, not as Moshe our hero, but rather as Moshe our teacher. Because that is the greatest job of a Jewish leader. To learn how to educate, to be an effective educator, and to make sure that our students understand the values of what we are all about, of what we stand for as a people. In fact, I know that we're 2 months away from Purim. Every high school boy in our neighborhood reminded me of that the other day. So yesterday was Tu B'Shvat. That means usually after Shvat is Adar, which is Purim. But this year we have two Adar, so it's 2 months from now. But a pasuk that has always amazed me is in the Megillah. We're familiar with the story of Haman and how the unexpected turn of events. And in the end, Haman is destroyed and Mordechai is saved. Beautiful story. So imagine that night after Haman is paraded through the streets Imagine he comes home for dinner that night. His wife says, "Nu, how was your day?" Where does he even start? What is he supposed to say? Well, the Megillah actually tells us what he says. And the Megillah says he comes home that night. He's sitting at the table with his family. And by Yisaper Haman Lazarus Ishto, he says, "You know, you'll never believe it. This is the craziest thing. I could never have dreamt of this happening. But everything turned on my head. And here I was. I was the second in command of this entire region of the Persian Empire. And all of a sudden, this guy Mordechai, out of nowhere, who we thought we were going to be able to destroy, somehow he comes out of nowhere and he takes over. And I had to lead him through the street. I mean, can you imagine?" And his wife turns to him and says, "How did that happen? I don't get it. How is it possible?" To which he responds, "Vayomer lo chachama v'zeres ishto." They're having a whole philosophical conversation. How can this be? How did it happen? And they say, "Im mizera ha'yehudim Mordechai." If Mordechai is from the Zera ha'yehudim, from the Jewish people, "lo tuchal lo," you will never be able to destroy him. Now, obviously, at face value, it means because Netzach Yisrael lo yishakera. Kadosh Baruch Hu promised us he's never going to destroy. Ki lo yitosh Hashem amo. He won't destroy the Jewish people. Rabbi Meir Shapiro, who is better known as the founder of the Daf Yomi movement, but he was an incredibly special personality. He's actually the founder of the Lublin Yeshiva, which was one of a kind in Europe in its time. And Rabbi Meir Shapiro said, maybe there's an additional level of meaning to this pasuk, and that is, they were warning Haman, "You have a plan and you've devised all the different ways of how you're going to destroy the Jewish people. It sounds lovely, but you want to know the secret to Jewish survival? Im mizera ha'yehudim Mordechai." If Mordechai is still paying attention to Jewish youth and to Jewish children, and as the Gemara tells us and the Medrash says, Mordechai invested of his time, it was not beneath him. He invested of his time to sit with the children and to educate them and to make sure that they understood the values of Jewish life and Jewish living. If that's what he's doing, lo tuchalo, you will never destroy the Jewish people. Because so long as we are educating our youth and we are paying attention to this important exercise of how we invest in our children and how we invest in our students, lo tuchalo, the Jewish people will never be destroyed. Doesn't matter what happens. As long as there is a next generation who appreciates and understands what we stand for and what we're all about. I'm going to share with you, I have till 2 o'clock, I was told, right? So benching is at 2 o'clock or at the door at 2 o'clock? Shira, if I go over, it's your fault. Okay, so let me share with you a very, very special letter. It's actually a copy of a letter. I have a friend in California. His name is Eli Reisman. I don't know if anyone here knows him. Doesn't matter. His father is a very well-known personality, Tzvika Reisman. So Eli is a friend of mine. And Eli's grandfather, Rabbi Herschel Reisman, was a Holocaust survivor. Passed away a couple of years ago, but he never spoke about his experience. And Eli, as the grandchild, has taken upon himself that he really wanted to uncover and understand the travels that his grandfather went through, the difficulties, the what he overcame, how he got to where he was. And he's piecing together, as time goes on, he's been piecing together different pieces of artifacts to try to really understand the entire picture and the story of his grandfather's miraculous survival during the years of the Holocaust. A couple of years ago, he got his hands on a letter that is in the archives in Tel Aviv, in the National Archives. And this letter actually is signed by his grandfather. It has his grandfather's name on the bottom with his signature that he recognized. And he gave me a copy of this letter, and I am amazed. The letter is written in 1945, Beis Shvat, 1945. And this is after they were liberated. And a number of Jews who were together in a certain community before the war ended up, whoever survived, came together after the war, and they decided they were going to try to stick together and do whatever they could to be mechazik each other. So there they were in Europe. And he says that he outlines exactly what happened, that on Gimel Shvat Tavshin Hei, we had this terrible experience where the Germans came in and they murdered many people in the city, and then they took everybody else to these camps, and some people went to the death camps, other people went to labor camps. He's describing the whole experience. Then he writes, after all of that was over, it was a tragic situation, but he says, nobody really had family left. We were all Yisomim. We were all left without parents, without siblings, without relatives. And all of us were looking around trying to figure out, what do we do now? Where do we go after the liberation? And they decided together that they were going to move to a town called Chenstachov. I know nothing about it. I'm sure you can look online. But that's the town that they chose to go to. And he writes how the local municipality was so nice to them And they gave them a multi-purpose house that they could use for anything they needed. So he explains here how we have a kosher kitchen, and it's a soup kitchen, and we all come, and we cook for each other, and we eat together every day, and we use this house as a shul. And then he writes that we also made a mikveh there with hot water. Like, whoever heard of such a thing? But he says somehow we figured out how to build a mikveh, and it's comfortable, and people are using it. And then he writes the following. He says, we had all of this going on in this house. And on top of all the different things that we use the house for, I'm going to read his words. Vigam cheder dati avur yiladim. We also use a room in this house as a school. Sheledavonenu. Unfortunately, he says, the despicable Germans killed all of our children, and we don't even have a single child to send to the school. But we've designated one of the rooms in this house as an educational institution. And I saw this, I was so amazed. Because they understood that the fundamentals of any Jewish community and the foundation of anything that we stand for is education. And without that, we're just not a community. Doesn't matter how much we have. We can have a mikveh and the soup kitchen, and we can have a shul, and we can have everybody davening and coming together, and it's all nice. But if we're not invested in education and we don't show that this is something that is on the forefront of all of our minds, we are not a Jewish community. And we have no value. One final story. I don't know if anyone here has read Rabbi Lau's amazing autobiography. I originally read it in Hebrew. I think when it was translated into English, some of the things were changed a little bit. I don't think it's an exact translation, I'm not sure. But both the Hebrew and the English are beautiful. It's really an amazing book. I mean, he's living a legendary life. But he writes a story in there about a Rebbetzin Tzila Saretskin. He says it was his son-in-law's aunt. I don't know whose son-in-law and whose aunt. I'm not sure exactly, but that's what he writes. And he says that she was a leading personality in the Beis Yaakov movement, a teacher supervisor, and an outstanding person. I'm reading directly from the book. Mrs. Saretskin was a Holocaust survivor and told my daughter Mary the following. In all the 6 years of the war, I cried only once. I was in the most horrible of all camps. I lost my entire family. I was left all alone in the world, broken in body and spirit, and I did not cry when any of that happened. I returned to our hometown and found that not a living soul was still there, but I still did not cry. They told me I should go to Lodz. That's where I would find the refugees who were gathering together, and maybe I would find a relative or an acquaintance that I remembered from growing up. I went to Lodz. I was totally exhausted. They showed me the area where the Jews were assembling. With my last remaining bit of strength, I walked through the streets in the twilight. Suddenly, I recognized the sounds coming from one of the windows. As if in a trance, as if someone were calling me from inside, I opened the gate. I entered the courtyard of an ancient building, and then I opened the door. In the darkness, I made out a row of boys with side locks sitting along both sides of a long table. At its head sat an elderly Jew wearing a baseball cap. The children were chanting the Aleph Beis to a tune. But I don't remember anything else. I found myself on the floor of the room with people standing over me, pouring water over my face. The teacher tried to revive me and asked me in a worried voice, "What happened to you? Can we help you? Please sit up. Maybe you'd like something to eat. Who are you? Where did you come from? How did you get here?" Slowly I recovered and I replied to them, "This is the first time I have ever cried in the past 6 years. I am not crying from pain, but I am crying from joy. I wandered far and wide until I reached Lodz, your town. And finally I saw that Poland is still what it once was. And if after all we've been through," I said to the teacher, "little boys in their side locks are sitting here and an elderly teacher is teaching them the Aleph Beis once again, then I know that no one can ever defeat us. Let me catch my breath. I am totally fine. These are tears of joy, not tears of pain." Education has always been everything that we stand for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referred to in our davening every morning as the Melamed Torah La'am Yisrael. With all that the Ribono Shel Olam does for all of us every day of our lives, there's so much that he can be referred to by. There are so many different ways in which we can relate to him. But the way that we choose to speak of our relationship with him is, he is the Melamed Torah La'am Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our teacher. And our job is to mirror his way of life, to believe in our children, to believe in our students, and to be the malamed, to be the teachers for all those who depend on us. Because that's the foundation. That is the fabric of what all of our communities are about. That is what we are. And as much anti-Semitism as there is, and as dangerous of a world as we live in, we remind ourselves, in Mizera HaYehudim, if we continue to focus and give our attention and trust and believe that there is going to be a Zera HaYehudim, that there will be a successful generation of Jews who will come after us, Lo Nuchal Lo, we will never be destroyed. It just simply won't happen. We are a strong people, but the reason why we have so much strength is because we believe and we invest in education. We believe and we invest the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in us. We believe in our children and we believe in our students. And that is why what all of you do is so noble and so special. And I hope that you use the part of today just to celebrate yourselves, to celebrate what it is that you do. I know that in positions of leadership, we are not celebrated. We're often yelled at. We're often spoken to in very disrespectful ways. It's okay. I also have that. It happens. But it's an opportunity every so often to just celebrate what it is that we do, to remind ourselves why the professions that we have chosen are so special and so noble and so critically important for the fabric and continuity of the Jewish people. And I'm just here to say thank you on behalf of the community. Thank you for having me. It's been a wonderful time spending here just a few minutes with everybody, but I wish you only continued mazel and hatzlacha and siyata d'shmaya. And yehi ratzon shetishva shchina b'masi adechem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should always be present and bless all of you and allow us to do what we're supposed to be doing and focusing our attention on. Have a wonderful day.